This simply provides a little improvement to a system, a support that you really need when you're looking for a job.
The legislature boosts unemployment payments for the first time in nearly two decades. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, May 27th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, surging fuel prices and the increasing cost of air travel hit especially hard in far-flung communities.
I just don't know if it'll be tenable for a lot of folks to live here anymore.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly. State lawmakers voted to increase state unemployment benefits for the first time since 2009 during the legislature's race to the finish last week. Senators attached the change to a largely unrelated travel insurance bill. If signed by Governor Mike Dunleavy, House Bill 302 would increase the maximum weekly benefit by $100 to $470. It would also triple the allowance for dependents to $72 per week. Future increases in the weekly benefit would be linked to wage growth. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel explained to his Senate colleagues shortly before the vote that the change would put Alaska just above the median unemployment benefit. About 1 in 50 Alaskans got at least one payment in 2024.
This simply provides a little improvement to a system, a support that you really need when you're looking for a job. It keeps folks housed and fed. Certainly doesn't keep anybody rolling in it.
He said the change included in House Bill 302 would not require employers to increase their unemployment contributions because the account that funds unemployment insurance is already, quote, tremendously overfunded. An official with the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development verified that in testimony to lawmakers last year. Alaska's unemployment benefits would still be substantially lower than in many states, including Washington, which offers workers up to roughly $1,150 per week. Representative Zach Fields, an Anchorage Democrat, said the bump in benefits would help Alaska retain construction workers and other tradespeople.
One of the reasons we've been losing skilled trades workers is they can't make ends meet, and in every other state in the Pacific Northwest, they can earn a lot better wages, recognizing that construction, oil, and gas is inherently seasonal.
The bill passed the Senate along caucus lines, 14-6, and in a wider cross-caucus vote of 34-6 in the House. Governor Dunleavy has not said whether he plans to sign the bill. Alaska has a shortage of foster care placements, and sometimes youth have been housed unnecessarily in residential psychiatric facilities. But a bill that passed the legislature and is awaiting Governor Mike Dunleavy's signature would require the state to prove that kids belong in that setting within 7 days of admission. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Mateo Jaime knows what it's like to be institutionalized in a psychiatric facility for no good reason. He says as a teen, he ran away from an abusive foster placement. Then police brought him to a youth psychiatric hospital where a doctor checked him in.
I explained my situation. I was brought here because things weren't working out with my foster home. And he told me, this happens all the time. I guarantee you'll be out of here within 2 weeks.
But Jaime didn't get out after 2 weeks. It was 2 months, he says, before he was released and returned to the same foster placement. He says he never had a court hearing and didn't understand what was going on with his case. And that time did not pass quickly. Jaime says seeing the ways staff treated kids inside was haunting, including watching staff use aggressive restraints and sedative injections on kids.
It's like growing up in a home where all you see is domestic violence and then seeing it at this facility where you have no rights, no due process, no hearing, nobody's coming in to check in on you, you're alone. And just thinking, if I do one thing that's wrong, that could happen to me.
Jaime testified multiple times in favor of a bill that would protect kids like him. It requires that kids get a court hearing within 7 days of a psychiatric placement to figure out whether it's necessary. That's much sooner than the current requirement of 30 days, and kids would be appointed their own lawyer. The bill passed unanimously in both the House and Senate and is awaiting the governor's signature. Experts say the legislation is long overdue. Amanda Metivier helped draft the bill and heads Facing Foster Care, which advocates for youth in state custody.
In Alaska, it's been a longstanding issue that acute psychiatric hospitals have been used as a placement for children and youth in foster care.
Federal investigations have documented abusive practices inside psychiatric hospitals for kids in Alaska. The state has also admitted that they've used psychiatric hospitals to house foster children when there weren't available placements. And Metivier says it's gotten worse.
In recent years, as we've seen a steady decline of the number of foster homes, we've seen more youth who are lingering out in hospital settings when they don't meet the criteria to be in those places.
She says she's heard from foster youth for several decades about the abuses that happen inside some of these hospitals. And she says if this becomes law, it will require a judge to hear from all invested parties to figure out the best kind of placement for each child. Representative Andrew Gray introduced the bill last session. He says letting kids linger in psychiatric institutions just isn't right.
The absolute human rights violation of having your freedoms completely taken away and no one coming to help you, that alone is enough that we have to fix it.
He says those placements are expensive, too. They cost more than $1,000 a night, partly paid by the state.
We want to make sure that the child is in the least restrictive environment that's appropriate.
To that end, the bill also creates a state license for what are called treatment foster homes. Those are foster homes for youth with more complex needs. That could increase capacity for the state to offer less restrictive settings than mental health hospitals. Mateo Jaime says he still wakes up sometimes and thinks he's inside the psychiatric institution.
Nowadays, it's hard for me to maintain any kind of friendship, any kind of acquaintance, because I feel like I can't trust people.
He says he's learning to gain back the trust he lost in adults back then, and he hopes to prevent foster youth from going through the same thing. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, remembering Butch Leidy, an advocate for Alaska Native fishing rights.
The history of fisheries in Alaska, like so much of our history, is a history of theft.
That's ahead. Stay with us. Three people died on Memorial Day in a collision between a motorcycle and a car south of Girdwood, according to Anchorage police. Police said in a statement that officers responding to calls about the crash around 4 p.m. Monday near Mile 80 on the Seward Highway found a Subaru Crosstrek engulfed in flames. The Subaru's driver, a passenger, and the motorcyclist were declared dead. None of those who died had been publicly identified as of today. The crash closed the highway for about 7 hours. The Anchorage Police Department's Major Collision Investigation Unit continues to investigate the crash. Any witnesses, including anyone with in-car video from the area at the time, is asked to contact Anchorage Police at 311. The Federal Aviation Administration has proposed fining Alaska Airlines $165,000 for allegedly allowing intoxicated passengers to board its flights. Federal regulations prohibit airlines from allowing anyone who appears to be intoxicated to board an aircraft. The FAA alleges Alaska Airlines did so on 11 occasions between February 2024 and February 2025. In a statement, an Alaska Airlines spokesperson says the company fully participated in an FAA audit that investigated policies and practices related to intoxicated guests on board its aircraft. As a result, Alaska Airlines says it made, quote, meaningful changes, including enhanced training for flight attendants and customer service agents. Alaska Airlines has several options in responding to the notice, including disputing the fine within 30 days. The airline did not say whether it would challenge the proposed penalty. Oil prices are going up because of the war in Iran, and in turn, the price of plane tickets has increased. Some of the hardest hit passengers are those in Unalaska, an 800-mile plane ride from Anchorage. KUCB's Sophia Stewart-Rossi reports from the remote Aleutian Island.
Locals rely on air travel to get to and from Unalaska. More than 4,000 people live here year-round. It's the biggest fishing port in the country by volume, and it's a hub for the smaller communities in the region. But flying here comes at a high cost. The closest city is Anchorage, and a round-trip commercial ticket can cost over $2,000. Resident Jackie Clifford Walter says the rising cost of airline tickets sometimes makes her feel stranded.
Like, I just don't know if it'll be tenable for a lot of folks to live here anymore.
When fuel prices nearly doubled nationwide because of the U.S.-Israel war in Iran, flying to the island got even more expensive. Clifford Walter says if tickets climb much higher, her family may only be able to leave the island once every other year.
Just don't know how practical that's going to be.
Josh Jacko is the general manager and owner-operator of Denaina Air, a charter company that flies regularly to and from Unalaska. He says raising prices is the last thing he wants to do, but the costs keep adding up.
We'll eat a little bit of it, you know, but not too much.
Denaina added a 2.5% surcharge to all its charters in April. Jacko says he held off at first, absorbing the cost while other companies raised their rates, and only added the surcharge once Anchorage jet fuel topped $6 a gallon.
We do have to think about keeping the doors open.
The only commercial airline for the island is Aleutian Airways. In an email to KUCB, a company spokesperson says they made several schedule changes in April in response to limited jet fuel supply in Anchorage and rising fuel prices. Aleutian also added nearly $34 per flight to Unalaska and to St. Paul. The airline says the charges are tied directly to fuel costs and are not permanent. Grant Aviation flies from Unalaska to neighboring communities in the region, like Nikolsky, Akoon, Atka, and the Pribilofs. Grant didn't immediately respond to an interview request, but its fares don't appear to have changed online. Some of the airlines buy their fuel from Delta Western. Delta Western has supplied fuel to Unalaska for decades. In an email, the company says its delivery and inventory fuel cycles help cushion customers from sudden market swings, but the company did not say whether their fuel prices have gone up. Jacko with Denaina Air says fuel is only part of the picture. Since the COVID-19 pandemic, the cost of aircraft parts and labor has climbed sharply, and he says the costs keep stacking up. Parts, labor, and now pricey fuel to top it all off.
How much can you charge before the consumer decides they just don't want to pay? You know, how high could you go before the consumer decides, forget this, we'll walk?
So when will prices come back down? The U.S. Energy Information Administration expects oil prices to ease later this year, assuming the Strait of Hormuz in the Middle East opens up. But the federal organization doesn't expect prices to return to pre-war levels within the next year. In Unalaska, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
Juneau residents say the city's sole electric provider's proposal to raise bills by 20% is not affordable. KTOO's Alex Solomon reports.
Alaska Electric Light and Power filed a rate increase case with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska, saying Juneau residents could see a significant spike in their electric bill next month, followed by another spike next year. The public comment period is open now. Douglas resident Linda Giger commented on the case. She says the additional cost would hurt her wallet.
I mean, 20% is significant. When your utility rates go up that high.
She calls it the icing on the cake of recent cost of living spikes, including groceries and gas. Giger and her husband have lived in their 1,600 square foot home since the 1980s. A few years ago, they made the switch from pricey oil to more affordable hydropower by installing an electric heat pump and radiant heating. Her most expensive electric bill within the past year was a little over $480 for the home's two units in January. Add a 20% increase, and a similar month next winter could cost her about $576.
Holy moly, I'm knitting a sweater.
She's retired, and although she and her husband have Social Security and pensions, she says the price hike could limit their ability to visit family in the lower 48.
It's not where I would like an extra $1,000+ to go a year.
Last year, ALMP made $47 million in revenue, according to its parent company, Avista Corporation. The power company last raised electric rates a few years ago by 6%. That increase was based on costs in 2021. Between then and now, prices on many products ALMP needs to operate have soared. Alec Mesdeg, ALMP CEO, says the rising cost of equipment and capital improvements created an annual $10 million hole. To fill it, the power company filed to raise its base electric rate by an overall 25%. Which Mesdeg says pencils out to a residential bill increase of about 20%. If the commission approves ALMP's request, residential rates would rise a few percentage points more than commercial rates. Mesdeg says that's because commercial customers are currently bearing a larger proportion of the cost for ALMP to provide power.
Based on our cost of service study, it appears that commercial customers, large commercial and small commercial customers, are subsidizing residential customers.
He says Juneau residents would still pay a lower electric rate than the national average, but he understands this is a substantial increase. He said the company is willing to guide customers to improve home energy efficiency and work with people who fall behind on their payments. The power company plans to raise rates in two phases. The first rate hike of 12.5% would start in June. The official public comment period closes on May 28, but the commission will accept comments submitted after that. The rate case is expected to conclude around August 2027. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
A senior Army officer will serve as the University of Alaska Fairbanks' new chancellor. Colonel Russell Vanderlucht will step down from leading the 11th Airborne Division's Arctic Aviation Command at Fort Wainwright to assume the role in September. That's according to a University of Alaska announcement this morning. Jonathan Taylor, a spokesperson for the university system, says Vanderlucht is a scholar in his own right with deep ties to the state, having graduated from UAF with a PhD in Arctic and Northern History.
Ultimately, Colonel Vanderlucht was selected because of his leadership style and philosophy based on trust. He's also very focused on the role that the Arctic plays in the world, and his combination of academic, military, and Arctic experience made him the best candidate for the job.
Former university president Pat Pitney, who retired last week, selected Vanderlucht from a pool of four finalists after a months-long search. Vanderlucht's base salary will be $309,000. Interim Chancellor Mike Sfraga's last day will be May 30th, but Vanderlucht won't start until September 9th. Larry Hintzman, who directs the university system's Arctic Leadership Initiative, will serve as interim chancellor over the summer. A federally funded program aims to install thousands of heat pumps across southern Alaska by late 2029. But the program's first year has been slow. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, the groups managing the effort are ramping up advertising in hopes of boosting interest and reducing energy bills.
Mardell Gunn lives 40 miles north of Haines, where winters are particularly cold, long, and snowy. She heats her home in two ways: a wood stove, and a 25-year-old oil boiler in the basement.
The worst thing in the world would be to have the boiler go out in the middle of the winter.
Soon, she won't have to worry about that. Gunn is getting an air source heat pump installed, paid for in large part by a federal grant. Hundreds of households across Alaska's Gulf Coast have applied to the program.
I'm doing it because I would really like to use less fossil fuels and be less dependent upon the heating oil.
Gunn will receive $8,500 from the Accelerating Clean Energy Savings Program, which should cover about half the cost of the two systems she will need to heat her home.
I've looked at heat pumps for quite some time, and the incentive is what put me over the edge.
The dollars are thanks to a grant from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. EPA in 2024 awarded nearly $40 million to two Southeast-based nonprofits to help install more than 6,000 electric heat pumps across the region. The groups, Southeast Conference and Alaska Heat Smart, started accepting applications about a year ago. But as of early May, they had received less than 600 applications. Just 100 systems have gone in so far. The grant winds down in October of 2029, which means to use the full amount, applications, approvals, and installations will have to pick up dramatically. Jesse Huff manages the energy program at Southeast Conference.
I feel like we're behind, but hopefully we catch up.
Heat pumps are highly efficient, says Paul Carrington, the owner of Clearwater Plumbing and Heating in Haines. That can mean lower bills and less energy use, particularly where the electric grid is primarily fueled by hydropower.
I'd encourage anybody that can afford to install one to get one. You will appreciate it.
Households located along Alaska's Gulf Coast from Metlakatla to Kodiak can apply. That doesn't include Anchorage, Palmer, or Wasilla, but does include the Kenai Peninsula. The address you apply for must be your primary residence, and your main heating system must be oil, propane, gas, or wood. The incentives range from $8,500 to $4,000 based on income. It's a reimbursement after installation for the two upper income tiers. For lower income households, the program pays a pre-approved contractor directly so that the household doesn't owe anything up front. Gunn and Haynes qualifies for that option.
Not everybody has $8,500 laying around.
Huff says the low-income program has been harder to get off the ground because it requires finding and certifying contractors who are willing to participate. Carrington of Clearwater Plumbing says his company is happy to install heat pumps, but at least so far, he's decided against participating in the low-income program, which he says would require a lot of extra back-end work.
The amount of paperwork that it creates for us is not worth it for the very few that are going to go in.
Huff of Southeast Conference says the complicated process can be a holdup for households, too.
It is a lot of work for the household. They have to really want to do it, and it's going to cost, you know, money, and a lot of times the incentive doesn't pay for all of it.
To learn more about the program or to apply, visit akheatsmart.org. Reporting in Haynes, I'm Avery Elfelt.
A beloved Lingit leader and fishing rights advocate in Juneau died last month at the age of 77. Clarence Butch Leidy was a tireless advocate for Alaska Native fishing rights and sovereignty. He devoted his life to the preservation of the Taku River, where his family fished for generations. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry reports.
Clarence Butch Leidy was Yanyedi and Taku Kwan, born and raised in Juneau. He was a Vietnam War veteran, grandfather, and great-grandfather. Leidy died at the age of 77 on April 10th. Until his death, he served as president of the Douglas Indian Association, a tribal government based on Douglas Island. For most of his life, Leidy advocated for restoring and preserving Alaska Native fishing rights and the health of the Taku River. In 2021, he participated in a city and borough of Juneau project called Juneau Voices. Interviews with locals who lived through Juneau's history were edited and placed along the seawalk for anyone to listen to.
The history of fisheries in Alaska, like so much of our history, is a history of theft.
In Leidy's installment, he talks about growing up fishing and the moment when the tradition was threatened by the 1973 Limited Entry Act.
It restricts the number of fishermen who can fish. They're trying to stop some of the outside fishermen from the lower 48, but it doesn't work out like that, and it makes it harder for locals to keep our livelihood.
Leidy inherited his father's fishing boat and business, but he wasn't allowed to use it.
I decide to fight. I'm not going to let anyone tell me I can't commercial fish. I come in with a stack of papers this high. I use their weapons against them.
It worked. Leidy got his permit.
Generations of Yanyedi fishermen. My grandfather, Willie Peters. My uncle, James Peters. My father and me. And now my grandson, Philip Andres Kedienti, who's fished with me since he was five.
Last year, during a panel discussion about the future of Alaska fisheries, Leidy continued to push for change.
We need to have a big say-so in what's going on. This is our country first. This is our fishery first. I want to leave it to my grandkids. I don't like to see the way it's going now.
He fought against pollution in the Taku River that he worried stems from mining in British Columbia. Here he is in a meeting with Canadian mining company leadership in 2025.
We're not going to back down or give way because there's too much at stake here. And if we lose the Taku, and then that's it, it won't come back. And that's the bottom line right there.
At a memorial on Wednesday at the Elizabeth Paradovich Hall, Leidy's sister-in-law, Barbara Cadiente Nelson, said he was always fighting for a better future for Tlingit people in Juneau.
And to this day, and right to the very end, he was still talking about the vision for Douglas Indian Association, the land-based tribe of this area. He was still pushing us as a council to define a path for our young people to be rooted in place, just as he was.
As family and loved ones lined up to get food, Cadiente Nelson said even that was a gift from Leidy.
Tonight, you will be receiving some of the sockeye that Butch caught down in the Taku. So even now, he's feeding us.
And in his own words, in Juneau Voices, Leidy said he hoped his family will always be able to fish and eat Taku sockeye.
I hope the salmon always return to the Taku River. I hope that people protect the watershed from more pollution. I hope as Tlingits, we will once again have our fishing fleet back.
In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone, Alex Solomon, and Yvonne Crumery in Juneau, Rachel Cassandra and Michaela Finnerty in Anchorage, Sophia Stewart-Rossi in Unalaska, Shelby Herbert in Fairbanks, and Avery Elfelt in Haines. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Crystal Hyde. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.